हरि ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 78, Chapter 89, Canto 10. Shlokana Sharanam, Summary of Verses. Verses 1 to 20, The Test of Tolerance. Verses 21 to 65, Krishna and Arjuna rescue the deceased sons of a Brahmin. Verses 1 to 20, The Test of Tolerance. Sukadeva Goswami said, Once, O King, as a group of sages were performing a Vedic sacrifice on the banks of the Saraswati River, a controversy arose amongst them as to which of the three chief deities is supreme. Right? So, it means the sacrifice itself, there's very standard set things that they do. Of course, they can argue over those. But there's a good chance that they're not going to, especially if Bhrigu's involved like that, because then they just do it his way. Right? But at these sacrifices, they're not just ritualistic. They're supposed to discuss philosophy, discuss scripture, you know, some aspect of it to the degree that they can. So then in sitting and discussing that, that's where the controversy would come up. Like that. So the yajna was the basis for our kirtan. Like we always hear that Harinam is the central point of all the sacrifices. So of meditation, of yajna, and of deity worship. So the yajnas also is that in between when they were doing rituals, morning, you know, noon and evening, that's when they would sit and discuss scripture. Right. Eager to resolve this question, O King, the sages sent Lord Brahma's son, Bhrigu, to find the answer. First he went to his father's court, to test how well Lord Brahma was situated in the mode of goodness. Bhrigu failed to bow down to him or glorify him with prayers. The Lord became angry at him, inflamed into fury by his own passion. Though anger towards his son was now rising within his heart, Lord Brahma was able to subdue it by applying his intelligence, in the same way that fire is extinguished by its own product, water. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, Here another story is told how that Vishnu is the object of service by pointing out his superiority. Right? Meaning another means that we had the one with Rikasura, so now we have another. Right? Srila Jiva Goswami writes, Among sages I am Bhrigu, Bhagavad Gita 10:25. He was of great status and thus qualified for the job. Since he identified himself as Brahma's son, he would not be hesitant in front of his father. Brahma was affectionate to him, and Shiva took him as a brother, and Vishnu was affectionate to Brahmins. Right, so he's the qualified person because he could deal with all of them. Otherwise, others might feel shy in front of Brahma or Shiva because of their greatness, right? Or Vishnu, but then you know here is that because of his position, then he would have access to dealing nicely with all of them. He went to Brahma's assembly to face him fearlessly, Abhi, Agat, in order to understand Brahma's greatness. Like others would be worried. Right? Brahma controlled the anger in his mind, Atmani, without having to accept apologies, Atmana, since he was capable of reflection, Prabhu, since he was born from Vishnu, Atmabhuhu. He thought as follows, As fire is extinguished by its product water, My anger is extinguished because my son who has arisen, because he is my son who has arisen from me. Yes, so he didn't have to have him, you know, he got upset, and then Bhrigu has said, no, please don't be upset. No one had to do any of that. Mm-hmm. He went through the thing, he started to get angry, then he controlled that anger, then he sees what's the proper thing, why he should do like that, and then there's the aspect that because he's the son, so therefore then he's not getting angry. Right? Yes.
We see this phenomena in the Bhagavatam Mahabharata that great personalities, and even brahmanas, they easily get inflamed with anger. So what's the nature of this? How come, you know, they're doing meditation thousands of years, and then still that fire sits inside them? So what is the...
Because only bhakti will get rid of it. These other things won't get rid. They can subdue from it. You can get so much benefit. But it's only when it's actually directed at Krishna in with the desire for in pure devotion that will remove. That's the whole point. Is great yogis, great this and that. They're, what they can do is amazing. But still, they are not as controlled as the devotees of the Lord. The example of, you know, then comparing them to Haridas Thakur. So, because it would appear that he's not doing anything special. He's just sitting and chanting all day. You know? But that's the whole thing. That is the specialness. That he can chant, and from that, then all his passions become subdued. So, then it just brings out how bhakti is the superior form. Because like you're saying, in Shastra, most of what you're talking about are great yogis, great saints, great renunciates or intellectuals or like that, great kings. But the aspect of being the pure devotee, then you'll see whoever has that, like Ambarish Maharaj, he didn't get upset. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
So that's one thing. Another thing is that when it gives the definition of a Muni, you know, these great sages, one of the definitions is that they're easily angered. It's just is part of the process. See, because if you're always controlling the senses, you're working on this very fine thing to keep everything in line, and then when something goes wrong, it's very big for you. See, something happens to us that we would say was small, it doesn't bother us because we're creating so much more turmoil in our own mind than what's going on outside. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, we're sitting here, and, you know, on the other side of that fence is sometimes total insanity. And most of the time, it doesn't bother us so much, because when we leave here, we create that much or more turmoil in our own minds than in our own lives and in what we do. Does that make sense? So it doesn't seem so big to us. But these sages, because they're so sense-controlled and self-controlled and in controlled environments, a little infraction actually becomes very big for them. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
They've controlled everything so nicely that what everybody else is, the ordinary person, what's doing is totally insane. Does that make sense? So that's one aspect. The other aspect is that if they're devotees, then you might see like this. But if they're not devotees, by controlling the senses without having a proper outlet in bhakti, then one gets very grumpy. And as long as everything goes nicely, it all works good. But if it's not, like we see with Durvasa, he's a yogi. It means after that pastime with Ambarish, then he went singing the glories of bhakti and the devotees on his way back to Brahmaloka. So being a yogi, that's where they hang out. You know, it's like the worshippers, the yogis and the worshippers Hiranyagarbha, they go to Brahmaloka. And then they have to wait until the end of the universe. You know, when Brahma's life is over, only then they can go, you know, like that. So they're not like us here. We can remember Krishna, go back now. They have to actually wait for another 150 trillion years. Right? So our system is a bit quicker, like that. Or if they're not as pious as that, then they'll merge into the body of Brahma, and then when he goes, then they'll go along with him. Does that make sense? So they get agitated very easily. They're not devotees, even though they're great sages and everything. Does that make sense? And also, sometimes it's just wrong. So they get, like, I can't remember who was it. It's a pastime in Chaitanya Leela. Something's going on, and I can't remember the situation, but it's there, and somebody was doing something or said something, and one of the, you know, associates of Lord Chaitanya turned around and just slapped him.
Last time.
Huh?
During Kirtan, Rathyatra, Harichandan, the servant of Pratapur Maharaj, Shivas Thakur was blocking his view of Lord Chaitanya.
Okay.
So again tapping in the due gate aside so that king can take darshan of Lord. So at one point of time...
he just slapped him, okay. So it's not supposed to be done. What's the point? So then... But you see on the other side, along with this, that they can easily anger. What's the other side of it? It was also defined.
Easily pleased.
So they can get immediately angry and then immediately reduce it. So you see that also. If someone just gets immediately angry and stays angry, then that's not the qualities they have. They'll get angry, and then either like Brahma, he's so qualified, then with his own intelligence, that he'll control it and bring it down. Like that. Or, then with some others, then it's corrected very easily. So very quickly they can get angry, and very quickly it'll subside. Right? So it's one of those things, you just don't worry about it. Right? You practice what you're doing, and you go on, and others do, it happens. You know, like we see this Brahmin here, in the story, you know, he's getting all grumpy. You know, so it happens. And so you just go with it. Right? Because everything should be like this, this, this. There is no such thing as material perfection. And bhakti is not dependent upon it. If the devotion's right and everything, then it'll work. You know? Like that, like this, yeah. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, when Bhrigu Muni reached his father, Lord Brahma, because Bhrigu wanted to test whether Brahma had the quality of goodness, he purposely did not offer his respects to his father, either by offering obeisances or by offering prayers. It is the duty of a son or disciple to offer respects and recite suitable prayers when he approaches his father or spiritual master. But Bhrigu Muni purposely failed to offer respects just to see Lord Brahma's reaction to his negligence. Lord Brahma was very angry at his son's impudence, and he showed signs which definitely proved this to be so. He was even prepared to condemn Bhrigu by cursing him. But because Bhrigu was his son, Lord Brahma controlled his anger with his great intelligence. This means that, right, one heart but four heads. So, you know, with his great intelligence. Right, yeah. This means that although the quality of passion was prominent in Lord Brahma, he had the power to control it. Lord Brahma's anger and his controlling his anger are likened to fire and water. Water is produced from fire at the beginning of creation. But fire can be extinguished with water. Similarly, although, yeah, just, you know, each one can be. Does that make sense? Like water, you can disperse that from earth. Earth comes from water. Right? But you have, let's say you have a puddle, you put enough earth in it, then there's no water. Yeah. Similarly, although Lord Brahma was very angry due to his quality of passion, he could still control his passion because Bhrigu Muni was his son. So we see is that the passion comes out in him. So he's testing the goodness, but we see is his natural passion comes up because he is the incarnation of passion.
In the Nectar of Instruction, Prabhupada mentions the two urges of mind. There is Avirodh Priti and Virodhit Krodh, that attachment without any reservation, or like Virodhit Krodh, like anger because of system, like restraint. So the first one we engage in direct senses so that attachment gets away. The second urge, how we address that in the
Or what's the point? You're getting angry after frustration, but what's the frustration from? Is there a service for that anger? You understand? Because it's a result of not getting what you want. So the point is what you want, should be engaged in Krishna's service. Then it gets purified. But the anger itself from that, what's that going to do for you? Right? Because we're not talking about Vaishnavas are being offended or something like that. That then you can engage. But this one is just you're frustrated in your own endeavors. Then how does that have something to do with it?
Does the real need?
Yeah, like that. Or if it's a matter of you're trying to do some sadhana and it's not working, and you're getting upset and impatient like that. But the point is it's about pleasing Krishna. It's not about doing that sadhana. It's about pleasing Krishna with that sadhana. So if we're focusing on pleasing Krishna, that sadhana will be easier. If it's just that it's a rule, it's harder. Sukadev Goswami continued, Bhrigu then went to Mount Kailash, where Lord Shiva stood up and happily came forward to embrace his brother. But Bhrigu refused his embrace, telling him, "You are a deviant heretic." At this, Lord Shiva became angry, and his eyes burned ferociously. He raised his trident and was about to kill Bhrigu, when Goddess Devi fell at his feet and spoke some words to pacify him. Bhrigu then left that place and went to Vaikuntha, where Lord Janardana resides.
Why would he take upon himself that task?
Why would he
take upon himself this task?
Well, that was what was said before. By Jiva Goswami. Among sages, I am Bhrigu. Right? So of sages that are there, he is the best. Right? Because he's a Brahmin, he's a scholar, he's all these things. So he's the most outstanding of all the scholars. You understand? Kumaras are renunciates, yeah, but he's a scholar. He's a sage. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the first thing. Then he was of great status and thus qualified for the job. So that's why he could do it and others couldn't. It means this job here, specifically, who else could do that? Right? Daksha wouldn't do it because he's too worried about his karmakan. He's not going to offend anybody and lose out on, not his father. His brother, maybe, yeah, Lord Shiva. Okay, he would not be hesitant in front of his father, right? He identified as Brahma's son, so he could just walk right in. Who else can just walk right in and deal like that? Right? And then Lord Shiva is a brother. So then he could deal with him. And Vishnu is an affection of the Brahmins. So of the Brahmins, he's the best of the Brahmanas. Of those who identify as Brahmanas, he's the best. Does that make sense? Nard, Muni, the four Kumaras, they don't identify as Brahmins. They are. But that's not their identity. Daksha, yes. But Bhrigu is technically on a higher status. So why, who else do you want to?
This place, why would you do that? Except, why would you agree doing that, being an instrument in such a way?
Because the sages had an argument and they needed to find out who was supreme. The sages, they're situated in goodness. They just do what should be done.
It's like a service.
Yeah, it's a service. Service to the sage. Because after he finishes, he'll go back and tell the sages.
He'll get his reaction still.
That's there, but if it's part of the job description.
And his son is also Sukracharya.
Bhrigu's son is Sukracharya.
Wow.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Bhrigu's son is Sukracharya.
That's the reaction.
And Brihaspati?
Brihaspati is not. Sukracharya is Bhrigu's
son. No, they're saying whose son is Brihaspati? No. But one of the Prajapatis, no? Must be. Because he's right. Otherwise, how is he the... Sukracharya is his son. Okay.
Sukracharya was in meditation and then along with Bhrigu, and then suddenly he loses his meditation and goes into the heavenly planets to enjoy and everything.
Who?
Sukracharya.
Oh.
And then he gets some sinful reaction and he dies. Then Bhrigu becomes so angry, Yamraj comes running and then says, "See, actually he died because of his own past karma, okay. You don't be angry on me."
Okay. Okay. Yes. That's why we don't get so involved with the demigods. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, after testing Lord Brahma, Bhrigu Muni went directly to Mount Kailash, to the Mount Kailash, where Lord Shiva resides. Bhrigu Muni happened to be Lord Shiva's brother. Therefore, as soon as Bhrigu Muni approached, Lord Shiva was very glad and personally rose to embrace him. But when Lord Shiva approached, Bhrigu Muni refused to embrace him. I think even Shiva is the older brother. Right? My dear brother, he said, you are always very impure. Because you smear your body with ashes, you are not very clean. Please do not touch me. When Bhrigu Muni refused to embrace his brother, saying that Lord Shiva was impure, the latter became very angry with him. It is said that an offense can be committed either with the body, with the mind, or by speech. Bhrigu Muni's first offense committed towards Lord Brahma was an offense with the mind. His second offense committed towards Lord Shiva by insulting him, criticizing him for unclean habits, was an offense by speech. Right? Because the quality of ignorance is prominent in Lord Shiva, when he heard Bhrigu's insult, his eyes immediately became red with anger. With uncontrollable rage, he took up his trident and prepared to kill Bhrigu Muni. At that time, Lord Shiva's wife, Parvati, was present. Her personality, like Lord Shiva's, is a mixture of the three qualities, and therefore she is called Trigunamayi. Right? And what was his name? Remember? It mentioned about, because he's the mix of those three, then he... Trilingam, okay. So he's Trilingam and she's Trigunamayi. In this case, she saved the situation by evoking Lord Shiva's quality of goodness. She fell down at the feet of her husband. It was her sweet words. She talked him out of killing Bhrigu Muni. Sugadeva Goswami continued. There, he went up to Lord Vishnu, who was lying with his head on the lap of his consort, Shri, and kicked him on the chest. The Lord then rose, along with Goddess Lakshmi, as a sign of respect. Coming down from his bedstead, that supreme goal of all pure devotees, bowed his head to the floor before the sages and told him, "Welcome, Brahmana. Please sit on this chair, in this chair, and rest a while. Kindly forgive us, dear master, for not noticing your arrival." Right? Because, like, Brahma noticed his arrival and noticed that he didn't respect him. Mm-hmm. Shiva noticed, and so he came forward, and he wasn't respected. And then here, then he just came up and physically dealt. Not that they didn't see, because you don't expect that necessarily to happen, but they took it that, we didn't properly respect. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, being saved from the anger of Lord Shiva, Bhrigu Muni went directly to the planet Svetadvipa, where Lord Vishnu was lying on a bed of flowers in the company of his wife, the goddess of fortune, who was engaged in massaging his lotus feet. There, Bhrigu Muni purposely committed the greatest sin by offending Lord Vishnu by his bodily activities. The first offense committed by Bhrigu Muni was mental, the second offense was vocal, and the third offense was corporal. Right? So of the three, that's the worst. These different offenses are progressively greater in degree. Right? So the least was with Brahma, he got upset. The next was with Shiva, he got really upset. That means the first was Brahma got upset but controlled it. The second, Lord Shiva, he got upset and didn't control it, but his wife, adjusted it. But the third, even though it's the greatest of the offenses, then Lord Vishnu wasn't fazed at all. These different offenses are progressively greater in degree. An offense committed within the mind is a positive offense. The same offense committed verbally is comparatively more grave. And when committed by bodily action, it is superlative in offensiveness. So, Bhrigu Muni committed the greatest offense by kicking the chest of the Lord with his foot in the presence of the goddess of fortune. Of course, Lord Vishnu is all merciful. He did not become angry at the activities of Bhrigu Muni. For Bhrigu Muni was a great Brahmana. Brahmana is to be excused even if he sometimes commits an offense. And Lord Vishnu set the example. Yet, it is said that from the time of this incident, the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, has not been very favorably disposed towards the Brahmanas. And therefore, because the goddess of fortune withholds her benedictions from them, the Brahmanas are generally very poor. Bhrigu Muni's kicking the chest of Lord Vishnu with his foot was certainly a great offense. But Lord Vishnu is so great that he did not care. Right? Because his position isn't adjusted in any way. He's still the supreme. Well, they're not, but the others, that you know, they have, you know, other aspects and moods and things like that. The so-called Brahmanas of the Kali Yuga are sometimes very proud that a great Brahmana like Bhrigu Muni could touch the chest of Lord Vishnu with his foot. But in fact, when Bhrigu Muni kicked the chest of Lord Vishnu, it was the greatest offense. Although Lord Vishnu, being greatly magnanimous, did not take it very seriously. It's not that it wasn't a great offense. It's not that, oh, nothing happened, it was perfectly fine. No, it was a great offense, but Vishnu is very magnanimous. Right? So, instead of being angry or cursing Bhrigu, Lord Vishnu immediately got up from his bed, along with his wife, the goddess of fortune, and offered respectful obeisances to the Brahmana. He addressed Bhrigu Muni as follows. My dear Brahmana, it is my greatest fortune that you have come here. Please, therefore, sit down on this cushion for a few minutes. My dear Brahmana, I am very sorry that when you first entered my home, I could not receive you properly. It was a great offense on my part, and I beg you to pardon me. You are so pure and great that the water which washes your feet can purify even the places of pilgrimage. Therefore, I request you to purify the Vaikuntha planet where I live with my associates. My dear father, O great sage, I know that your feet are very soft, like a lotus flower, and that my chest is as hard as the thunderbolt. I am therefore afraid that you may have felt some pain by kicking my chest. Let me touch your feet to relieve the pain that you have suffered. Lord Vishnu then began to massage the feet of Bhrigu Muni. Yeah, because he also called him dear father, because Manu says that if you have a Kshatriya and a Brahmin, then the Brahmin's the father, the Kshatriya is the son. Even if the Brahmin's young and the Kshatriya is older. Like that. Srila Vishnu Chakrabarti Thakur, oh no. Lord Vishnu continued, please purify me, my realm, and the realms of the universal rulers devoted to me by giving us the water that has washed your feet. This holy water is indeed what makes all places of pilgrimage sacred. Today, my Lord, I have become the exclusive shelter of the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi. She will consent to reside on my chest because your foot has rid it of sins. Okay, so he's saying now she will reside here happily because, you know, all whatever may be of, you know, improper has been removed by the touch of the foot of this great Brahmana. Right, so that, you know, Lord Vishnu, he can see that because he has that affection for the Brahmins. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, forgiving such offenses committed by Bhrigu is a sign of Sattva Guna. On the other hand, Vishnu's pacifying Bhrigu, considering that he, the Lord, is an offender of Bhrigu, is a sign of Shuddha Sattva. Mm-hmm. Right? So that you can forgive, that's Sattva. But at the same time is where you might consider your wrong in it and want the other person's benefit. That's Shuddha Sattva. That's the actual. So when I'm not sure where it is, but one of the Acharyas then talks about the principles that someone does wrong to you and you wish to see them punished for it, then that'll be the lowest stage. You know, and your satisfaction is them being punished. Then the next is where they may have offended, but you will forgive. You know, so we see here is then goodness. Because passion, you want to see results, or maybe due to ignorance, or a mix, or like this. But the third level is that you are praying for their benefit so that they may elevate themselves or be benefited. That's then, as it says here, that's Shuddha Sattva. Because only the Vaishnavas can actually do that.
I think Maharaj and Ambarish Maharaj
says something. Ambarish Maharaj says? I know it's someplace where it's mentioned.
Last year we did that.
Okay. Yes? No?
Forgiveness is only made by Brahmana. More or less.
Brahmanas, it's easier to forgive. Others will find it a little more difficult. You know, they might need, you know, 10, 20 years or something.
You know. Forget first.
Yeah. But they eventually get there. Like, I upset somebody once, and I was talking with this other devotee, and that, and I said something about, you know, this happened and this and that, and, you know, but I said, yeah, you know, sometime and it'll be okay. And he says, no, it'll take 10 years. That devotee said about the what was the family. He said, no, it'll take 10 years. And funnily enough, because I just, okay, but after 10 years, then it was, he was not upset like that. And then after another 5 years, after 15 years, then he thought, well, he wants to, you know, go back to, you know, the relationship. So sometimes it takes a little time.
But when there is not, forgiveness is not done, there is some, can say, impurity, difficult to go to pure bhakti.
Yeah, because tolerance comes from forgiveness. Yes. Like we say, yes. Be humble, be tolerant.
Yes.
Like that. That means that there's forgiveness.
Yes.
So in some places it mentions that forgiveness is the prominent quality of a brahmana.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, some places truthfulness is brought out, yes, or this or that. But as far as you could say, is occupationally you could say, but probably personally in their character, then it would have to be forgiveness. So it's the sign of Shuddhasattva. So we can see devotees are the ones, like Haridas Thakur, you know, he's tolerating, and then when he finds out it's going to be a trouble for them, if he doesn't die, then they'll get in trouble. So then he just goes into samadhi, then he's dead, and like that. And so, yeah, you don't hear that they got into trouble, because they did their work. But then by that, then it was seen how great a personality is. Haridas Thakur, that the king that had ordered this then came and said, you can stay, you know, anywhere in my kingdom, you know, safely. He gives the order. So then that cave that Haridas Thakur stayed in, you know,
yes,
it had the big snake in it,
yes,
that was in that king's kingdom.
Okay.
Like that, yeah. Yes.
Well, we have a condition in nature, and reading these pastimes, we sometimes trying to pretend or trying to cheat ourselves and saying, you know, I'm better than I am, and. But then when the situation comes, immediately the real thing comes. I mean, not the real thing, but whatever condition is there.
No. The real thing. Then what you're talking about, that behind that's the really real thing.
Yeah.
So
both of them come out, and it's really nasty, and it's ugly. But what can we do? It seems like this lifetime, that's what's given. We have some, you know.
No, but it's the process will purify. We just stick to the process, and these things just start to go down. It's just a matter of time, because these aren't the actual qualities of the soul. These are the qualities of the conditioning that we, the soul, have cultivated, you know, for some time. Like that. And so, depending upon what it is, it may be deeper. It may be something that's been going for many more lifetimes. And something that you see goes away immediately, it may be something very light, or just from this, you know, you just started cultivating this lifetime. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's just, if one continues the process, then all these things will go. You know the standard, you try to practice it. But, So what do you call it? So it's just a matter of practice where you get the I'm better than that to then they upset you that I'm better than you. But you're better, you know, the better part is, you know, remains. So that part, you know, the practice is. Yeah, so it's just a matter of time. Then you contemplate that. What was wrong with that? What should have been done? What would be the proper attitude, or what should have been said, or all these things. And then it creates a samskara. And then it comes. Then it'll become a little less. And at some point, you'll be able to control it a bit. But depending upon just how strong it is, it may take more or less time. Maybe it just happens once, you that, and then it's you able to control it. But some things may take you, you know, many times or years. Or, but it just means that one's a little deeper. But you'll see so many other ones are being controlled. So it's just a matter of time. You know, since we continue the process, then all that will just go away. And that's the point, is that if we're trying to please Krishna, so it's not just what's wrong here, technically, what should I have done? That's you're looking at that aspect, but in the context of how what would be pleasing. If you look, start with what would have been pleasing to Krishna? What should I have done that would have been pleasing to Krishna? Then you're going to look at the devotional side, and that will be more inspiring, more easy to work with. Then, if particular qualities, particular actions, particular words would have been supportive of that service, then it's easier to see. Otherwise, we have, you know, just by our conditioning, we may say that, well, I should have done this, but that's whether that was pleasing to Krishna either. So what's recommended by scripture, what the acharyas say, what's good for, what will please Krishna. So if you start with what will please Krishna and work back from there, you'll find that you get, it moves forward much more quickly. Well, if you just try to adjust the thing on its own by, simply by qualities, even though they're superior to bad action and things like that, that they're still not the actual goal. They're still qualities that are used in Krishna's service. Is that?
We can see that those are not devotees. They are always behaving like this, like anger, and they consider it heroic. So by practice, whatever practice you have done, at least we are able to feel that this is wrong thing.
Yes. No, because we're comparing it to the acharyas. Mm. But you see, is that if they're getting angry and they consider it a right thing, then it's some quality. But it's not about pleasing Krishna. Mm. You know what I'm saying? I mean, in the more modern context, it just depends upon how far back you're going. But in the contemporary context, you know, it's like before something happened to the family member and then the other person went out and they went down to that part of Bombay where all the bad guys were, you know, in all their warehouses and burned down the whole thing, kill everybody, do the whole thing like that and rectify the whole thing, even though the guy before, you know, has trouble sitting in a chair without falling out of it. But whatever it is, it's Bollywood, right? So like that, then it works. But it was about qualities, you know, about that, things like that. Nowadays, I'm not sure what they do. I have no idea. Like that. I haven't ridden on the video buses for a while. Before, Delhi to Jaipur, or Vrindavan to Jaipur, 5-hour bus, you know, video buses. You know, you go through a lot of movies. You know, so.
It's more interesting than by plane. But
yeah, no, it's just, yeah, you don't get off like that. Yeah. So that was a long time ago. So those are the older ones. New ones, I'm not sure what they do. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, "The Lord continued to address Bhriga Muni. My dear Lord, he said, my chest has now become sanctified because of the touch of your feet. And I am now assured that the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, will be very glad to live there perpetually." Right? Because he's looking at it because, you know, he's the husband, the wife, and then the wife will always have that contrary element. So now she'll be pleased to be here. But we know that he's independent and is not dependent upon her. So she's always trying to render service so that he'll be, you know, that she'll have something to do. Right? Because he'll reciprocate according to how you surrender. So if she's always rendering service, he'll reciprocate that. But then he's looking at it, you know, from that human perspective, that no.
Yeah. Maharaj, can you say that in that pastimes, Vishnu is taking the primary aspect and Shiva and Brahma taking the secondary one?
Yes, you could say that they're looking more at the secondary. But even there, he's taking primary about worshipping the Brahmins. But why? Because that's, you know, that's the proper thing. It's pleasing. So it's a higher thing. But the Shuddha stuff is that he's not disturbed at all. He just sees it, and the Brahmin's here, and he's just saying, okay, well, what's the Brahmin? Well, you know, he's upset, so there must be something that we've done wrong, and that. Because he could walk up to them and on the bedstead kick them. That means they hadn't stand up and greeted him, so then Vishnu will look at it that way. But another name for Lakshmi is Chanchala, indicating she does not stay in one place for a long time. Therefore, we see that a rich man's family sometimes becomes poor after a few generations. And sometimes we see that a poor man's family becomes very rich. Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, is Chanchala in this material world. Whereas in the Vaikuntha planet, she eternally lives at the lotus feet of the Lord. Because Lakshmi is famous as Chanchala, Lord Narayan indicated she might not have been living perpetually by his chest. But because his chest has been touched by the feet of Bhriga Muni, it was now sanctified, and there would be no chance that the goddess of fortune would leave. Right, so then there's also that other aspect of just the, you know, that element of displaying his, that the flavors of conjugal ras, right? But it's in Swakya. You know, so to have that formality, and Bhriga Muni is a grihastha, you know, so these things can be discussed. Like that, and also, yeah. Bhriga Muni, however, could understand his position and that of the Lord, and he was struck with wonder at the behavior of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right, because he knows who he is and who the Lord is. Because of his gratitude, his voice choked up, and he was unable to reply to the words of the Lord. Tears glided from his eyes, and he could say nothing. He simply stood silently before the Lord. Right, so then you see the devotion and all those things like that. So it works out nicely. Sugadeva Goswami said, Bhrigu felt satisfied and delighted to hear the solemn words spoken by Lord Vaikuntha. Overwhelmed with devotional ecstasy, he remained silent, his eyes brimming with tears. So the Lord, he's one of his name is Vaikuntha, not because he's the Lord of Vaikuntha, but his name is also Vaikuntha. Yeah. And so that satisfaction and all that, then it brought about this transcendental ecstasy. O King, Bhrigu then returned to the sacrificial arena of the wise Vedic authorities and described his entire experience to them. Amazed upon hearing Bhrigu's account, the sages were freed from all doubts and became convinced that Vishnu is the greatest Lord. From him come peace, fearlessness, the essential principles of religion, detachment with knowledge, right? So the essential principles of religion. Religion's there, but what are the essential principles? You work on that, then the application of the religion itself then becomes, you know, very favorable.
Yes.
Detachment with knowledge. The eightfold powers of mystic yoga and his glorification, which cleanses the mind of all impurities. He is known as the supreme destination for those who are peaceful and equipoised, the selfless, wise sages, saints who have given up all violence. Right, so violence means you want something for your benefit. So you're able to disturb others to get that. So when you say someone's given up violence, means they have to give up desire to give up violence. They become fearless. They have to have given up desire, you know, anything other than the service of the Lord. That you become peaceful because you have no material desires, right? So it means it's all connected to the Lord. You're just situated in devotional service. So devotional service, the Lord has these, and so that devotion to Him, one develops these kind of qualities. Right? His most dear form is that of pure goodness. And the Brahmins are His worshipable deities. Persons with keen intellect who have attained spiritual peace worship him without selfish motives. Right? So spiritual peace, like we said, there's no motive, there's no material desire, so no karma or jnana. So then that worship then becomes pure devotional service. Right? So we say without selfish motives, that means karma and jnana. It doesn't just mean karma. Right? Because if we're engage more on the platform of karma, then we'll think give up selfish motives means karma, right? Or personal thing. If we're on the platform of jnana, we say give up selfish motives, it will mean karma. But it also means jnana, it means liberation. It means both. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, after testing Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Lord Vishnu, Bhrigu Muni returned to the assembly of great sages on the bank of the river Saraswati and described his experience. After hearing him with great attention, the sages concluded that of all the predominating deities, Lord Vishnu is certainly the greatest. Because you're always hearing Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. So the doubt comes up. After hearing the details from Bhrigu Muni, the sages were astonished because although Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva were immediately agitated, Lord Vishnu, in spite of being kicked by Bhrigu Muni, was not agitated in the least. You know, it's not that he made, you know, some night he was being nice, but made some little side, mild, snarky comment, or, you know, just a little sarcasm, or just a little something like that, you know. You know, be like that, you know, so not like, you know, yeah, but next time you come, maybe knock and then, you know, we won't insult you or, you know, it doesn't do any of that. Because you see that also, sometimes they can be forgiving and all that, but they'll just throw in that, just that last little bit. You know? Yeah. Well, the example is given that small lamps may be agitated by a large, slight breeze. But the greatest lamp or the greatest illuminating source, the sun, is never moved, even by the greatest hurricane. One's greatness has to be estimated by one's ability to tolerate provoking situations. Oh, this is where that's from. I have that written down. One's greatness has to be estimated by one's ability to tolerate provoking situations. The sages gathered on the bank of the river Saraswati concluded that one who wants actual peace and freedom from all fear should take shelter of the lotus feet of Vishnu. Like, there's no other process in the world. Yes.
We see the sages, they go through this process of research, but what we got from the parampara is worship of Krishna, the highest form of Bhagavan.
Yes.
So should we, with the years, convince ourselves philosophically that actually what we got is the highest, because they start from that platform. We just believe, you know, Srila Prabhupada and the devotees, that that's what we need. But
yes,
actually, we're not convinced.
But yes, but the point is they are great sages, and it said wise Vedic authorities. So wise means realization.
Yeah.
So they've heard, they've contemplated and practiced, and they've realized, right? And after all that, they still don't know. Even though they're great Vedic authorities. Right? Then, with Bhrigu Muni, then they go do this whole thing. And then, from that, then hearing that, you know, because of their qualification, then they're convinced.
Yeah.
So having heard, they're convinced. But they had to go through all that.
Yeah.
And then we're just given, what is it? Pibhita Bhagavatam Rasamalayam. We're just given the essence. Right, we don't have to, you know, climb the tree. We don't have to pick the fruit. We don't have to peel it. We don't have to get rid of the seed. We just have to eat it. It's already been offered. Right? So in that way, if you look at it, these stories then show that we actually have gotten. Maybe we haven't realized, but the point is we have. That's the special mercy of Lord Chaitanya. These other ages, they have to work. And this age, it's just handed to you. It's always been there for those who want. But generally, people like going through some trouble and, you know, feeling good about the trouble. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, they do their austerities, they study, they, you know, whatever it is, then you feel, you know, I've worked, I've gotten something.
Yeah.
And so here, because we're given the best of all knowledge, the jewel of Vedic knowledge, then, because we don't know, we'll take it, like you're saying, not so seriously. But the point is that's the meaning of Lord Chaitanya. He's come and given the highest to the lowest. You know, and in other ages, the sages who aren't the lowest, but still it takes them time to get there. But by our, you know, position, then we come. So, contemplating that, practicing that, associating, reading like this, then with time we become gradually convinced. That's the whole thing. That's the process. And one becomes convinced, one becomes very, you know, committed to that, and you know that becomes the standard position. Doesn't mean that there's not. Difficulties come up, as it mentioned in the previous chapter. That was in Vedanta Sutra. Yeah, where he's mentioning that even devotees may do something wrong, but because they're being under the care of Krishna, still they'll advance if they're interested in advancing. But if they get distracted and they want to be distracted, then that will slow things down. But eventually it'll work. But if they want to be focused on this, then they move forward, and then it works very nicely. So it's not dependent upon all these mundane elements. Is that yes?
So,
Or can we say that the level of appreciation is directly connected with the process, how we follow that process? If there are many difficulties, for example, then our level of appreciation automatically goes up, because we went through the whole thing and we know now we can appreciate better. As if when we're just given as a gift without any effort, apparently.
That's there. That aspect is one, but the point is it's not just the effort, it's that we surrender to Krishna, because Krishna reveals himself only because you surrender. So they put in the effort, yeah. You know, with a sincere desire to know, because they actually wanted to know, then through the process, then it was revealed. Right? So it's that surrender to that process to please Krishna. That's what actually generates it. So the more you do that, the better it works. And the most important element in that is association. So hearing the instructions that we get from the spiritual master, from the acharyas, then that's what we apply. Right? And then we associate with other devotees, you know, like-minded, we take inspiration from them. So... The sages gathered on the bank of the river Saraswati concluded that one who wants actual peace and freedom from all fear should take shelter of the lotus feet of Vishnu. The sages thus concluded that by following the principles of Vaishnava Dharma, one becomes actually perfect. But if one follows all the religious principles of a particular sect and does not become advanced in understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, all such labor of love is fruitless. Right? So, Vaishnav Dharma includes whatever secondary or indirect dharmas match your situation. Like that. So, but if you just follow the religious principles without following Vaishnav Dharma, then it's a waste of time. Like that. Because you'll just move on. You may have got that, you'll get the results of worshipping in whatever way you did. But then that can change. The mind can change by associating so many things. But if you worship according to Vaishnav Dharma, then whatever your position, whatever the religious principles you're using, then one will advance.
Maharaj Vaishnava Dharma is like the primary thing.
Primary, yes. It's the primary. So that's why Vaishnav Dharma can be followed by anyone in any situation. Even someone starting in a different religious process, they see that in connection to Vishnu, how that pleases the Lord, and then progress. And if what they're doing has a value, then you can continue. And if you find that there's other aspects or other traditions that are better suited, then you take those up. But it's about pleasing Krishna.
Yes.
It's not about following the religious principles of a particular sect.
Because
everything's a sect. Saying that, oh, we're a sect, what do you mean? Everything's a sect. Because if you can say, well, no, but Christians, there's 2 billion of them. But, yeah, in how many subdivisions? Right? You know, so that's there. And even if you want to say, a sect following the Vedic literature, you have 1 billion people. That's 1/7 of the planet. So even if you take it, it's half of the Christians. So they can't sniff at that. Everything else is less than that. Right? Does that make sense?
And the best part is that at least all the sages were unanimously come to a conclusion that one should worship Vishnu.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Unlike modern, they did not come to a conclusion at all.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, so all the sages have unanimously come to the conclusion, so it means they want to know. You had something more?
Yeah, I was thinking that sometimes it brings conflict of interest in the devotee's mind when we want to take higher and give up lower. But then, you know, what about loyalty? Because we're loyal to Judaism, we're loyal to Christianity, we're loyal to our own community. So how would that match? We're taking Jaiva Dharma or Sanatana Dharma and give up whatever.
But what's the purpose of these others?
What's the purpose?
Yeah. Means if we're looking at it, the purpose is to develop love for God and appreciate His name, form, qualities, pastimes, and be absorbed like that. Which, if you look very carefully, one of the main shamas, that's what it says.
Yeah.
You know, it says exactly that. So then the whole point is that then, but there's so many other aspects where people get distracted. So all we're doing is taking that essential point, and that's being practiced in this way. So that it goes beyond the particular sectarian aspects. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so those Vaishnava principles are there. If you can apply it in there, great. But the point is how many are going to discuss that, you know? Yeah, so then this is the natural thing. But it's not that idea that they're trying to move forward and, you know, follow God's law and all that. That's a good thing. You know, and they're how they're approaching and all that, then that will be unique to their particular locale. Because that's how these things come up, is because of the locale. Then it may get transported around the world, but you'll see as even when it goes to other places, it starts to take on the flavors of that locale, which is not always appreciated by Rome. You know, but the point is that it that's just the way things work. So the essential point of developing that, so that's the whole thing, is that's why the Vedic system is so perfect, because it has that wide range, and in all those situations you can be involved. So you can be just as fully surrendered living at home as opposed to in a monastery. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's the whole thing, that it doesn't always... it's not able to accommodate. It's that all of these situations can do. Does that make sense? While you've seen these others, there's some group that's the ideal, and everything else is substandard. Like that. You know? So that's the difficulty. One way of doing it.
Constant.
Huh?
Constant.
Yes, it's fixed.
Raj, in this, there is a separatist mentality also, because we are not seeing it is coming from Krishna himself. Like that, Jesus, he said to be the one of the persons.
Sorry, I'm not that. I'm just thinking, because we have the holes in the fence. You know those air cans with the horn?
Yeah.
It was super loud like that? Just get one and sit here, and then when they come by, just wah.
Was the big Mack truck? They have a compressor.
Oh.
They have a compressor, and then when you push, it goes like a shaking.
Well, you could probably take that and stick it into the end of that thing that they use for, you know, in the villages for the... And you can see what happens.
Yeah, everybody's like...
This is what we were talking about before. That's the first level. The second level is that, well, okay, we forgive. And the third level is we hope that they'll progress in devotional service.
We hope we don't disturb them.
Yeah.
No, disturb them, we just construct a big fence.
Yeah, no, that's there. Both ways. This way and this way. Okay. To execute religious principles means to come to the platform of perfect knowledge. If one comes to the platform of perfect knowledge, then he will be uninterested in material affairs. Perfect knowledge means knowledge of one's own self and the Supreme Self. The Supreme Self and the individual self, although one in quality, are different in quantity. This analytical understanding of knowledge is perfect. Simply to understand I am not matter, I am spirit, is not perfect knowledge. The real religious principle is devotional service or bhakti. Right? So even though one's practiced karma, jnana, yoga, all these different things, studied scriptures and or performed austerities, like Prahlad Maharaj lists, I think he lists like 12. In another chapter, somebody lists about 14 or 18 or different things. All it is that these are all processes used in the Vedic literatures. So, that you know I'm not the body, I'm the soul, okay, that's knowledge, but it's not perfect. When you understand that you know, he's uninterested in the material, and he has this perfect knowledge of one's own self and the Supreme Self. Right? So if we simply say, we're not this body, Prabhu, that's a realization. That's good. But point is how does it show the perfect relationship with the soul and the Lord like that? And the aspect of the qualities. So then it would be based on what qualities we should be following, how to serve Krishna with that, as servants.
Master King says here means Bhagavan.
Yes. So self is the jiva, and supreme self will be Krishna.
Yes.
Now just like Atma and then Paramatma. Or Brahman, Parabrahman, like that. Because everything's Brahman. The Krishna is the Parabrahman. Right? Now, if it's talking from here, then Brahman just means Krishna's Brahma Jyoti. And then you have the material world. But technically, the material world is also Brahman. The Jiva is Brahman.
Yes.
Like that. The internal potency is Brahman. But Krishna is beyond that. He's Parabrahman. Okay. Yeah. Devotees become uninterested in the material world, not simply because of theoretical understanding, but because of practical experience. When a devotee realizes the effect of association with the Supreme Lord, he naturally hates the association of so-called society, friendship, and love. This detachment is not dry, but is due to achieving a higher status of life by relishing transcendental mellows. So, when one comes to the position of appreciating the Lord and that transcendental association, there's no interest in the mundane association. So that's how one switches. That's probably gives the example of the inchworm. Right? When the inchworm puts its front legs down and it's solid, then only it'll pick up the back. Right? Like that. So when one comes situated in the transcendental position, one actually does not have any interest in the mundane.
Yes.
Like that.
Yes.
That's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur recommends that on a regular basis you're analyzing, you know, if you're advancing or how it's going or like this. So if you're not doing it on a regular basis, then, you know, he gives the example of like every Ekadasi. Then you could sit and contemplate like that.
Yes.
Like that. So that way then what do you call it? So twice, so 24, you know, 23, 24, 25 Ekadasis a year, then you can contemplate and think about everything like that. Otherwise, then you have to, once a year on Rosh Hashanah, then you can, you know, think about these things. But otherwise, then you do that on, you know, on a regular basis. But if not, then it would be constantly that you're doing that. Constantly you're contemplating, you know, how the action, you're understanding how to apply that, how to appreciate that. So, by association means we're reading here, we're hearing what Prabhupada says in the Acharyas, we're hearing the comments, then from that, then we can take that away and then try to apply that. We do our own studies, you know, other association, then like that, then we're always nourishing this aspect. So that's why it says it's not dry. Dry means you're simply trying to give up because it's bad. But the devotional service being actually perfect, then, you know, the real religion or the actual perfect or actual knowledge, you see Prabhupada uses those things. Because knowledge is there, there's actual knowledge. Okay. So then, it's because it's connected to Krishna, so it's not dry. Does that make sense? Is there something bona fide to eat that's super dry?
Yeah, matzah.
Matzah. Okay. Yeah, something like a bunch of crackers, like and nothing else, no water, right? So now, if you're super hungry and you come across these crackers, you're going to eat them.
Mm-hmm.
But now, if then I come along next to you with some very nice, delectable, succulent, you know, kind of thing like that, are you going to be eating the crackers?
No.
But you're hungry. That's why you ate the crackers. No, but the point is this is better. So when you get something higher, you automatically give up the lower. So that's it. It's when you surrender to Krishna, when you take up the devotional service, that's when then one finds giving up these lower things are easier. But trying to give them up directly, that's hard, because technically we can't do it. Mm-hmm. We don't have that potency, because the laws, the modes of nature are there.
That's why nowadays Jews for Passover they put some halva spread on matzah, or they do Nutella on matzah. Then it makes it a little tastier. Otherwise,
no,
in the desert, it wasn't available.
No butter?
Yeah, butter.
Yeah.
Cheese.
Yeah, okay.
Actually, they sell in the airport like matzah sandwich.
Really?
Yeah, for Passover.
Okay. That's fun. Yeah, so the idea is that you have to put more on it to get more, so that higher taste, and it gives up the lower. So that's why we saw when we were studying in the chapters where we're about killing the demons. So then Krishna does certain things. You surrender to him, they'll just go away. But then certain ones, then it said you have to be conscious and want them to go away. Then I think that's Balaram. Then they'll take them away. But the point is when you doing things to please Krishna and you want these to go away because it pleases Krishna. If you just want it, if you're praying that these things are given up, it'll be it means you're turning to Krishna. It'll be effective, but it'll be slower than if you're trying to please him by that. So it's a shift in the mentality. So it's not just shift from comfortable with, you know, bad behavior to, you know, wanting to give up bad behavior, but it's actually, why do you want to give up bad behavior? If it's just because it's bad, then that's pious. It's religious. But it has to be, you know, sad-dharma, that we are giving those up so that we can be engaged in the proper things with Krishna, because it doesn't please Krishna. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, how you say, we're here, the guy's going by with the thing, we've hooked up our whole horn and, you know, the whole big monster thing like that, and we've gotten the biggest can and the biggest, you know, loudest, and when he comes by, then we, you know, squeeze the handle, it goes off, the guy freaks out, you know, runs into the fence over there, and, you know, we're quite happy, you know, job well done. But whether that would actually please Krishna or not, then that's another discussion. Right? So we have to look at what would please Krishna. So then most likely building a wall, that would work better. Yes.
Now we have a problem because you can see what's happening. We cannot see.
Yeah. But the essential point here is not seeing, but hearing. So like that. Like it says, of all the senses, the hearing is the one that then wakes you to the spiritual.
But it is difficult to concentrate on hearing that side and that side.
Well, it doesn't work very good the other way either. You hear and see, then it's like more distracting. I mean, most doesn't. Only when the horse or the elephant goes by, then that's a... By thinking of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one becomes free from the contamination of the faulty association of the material world. And thus one becomes peaceful, right? The faulty association of the material world. So when we take, oh, but you're giving up everything, and no, it's just what's of the material world. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean association that's here in this place, mm-hmm. right? It means association that's mundane. Mm-hmm. So then one has to see the connection to Krishna. And thus one becomes peaceful. Right? So being free from contamination of faulty, then one becomes peaceful. Because if you have material desire, you associate with those with material desire, then you become not peaceful. So if you associate with those who don't have material desire, then you become peaceful. The world is in a disturbed condition because of scarcity of such peaceful devotees in human society. Because everybody just agitates and disturbs and this and that. A devotee is callous to all subjects other than his engagement in devotional service. This mode of life is the highest perfectional stage. from which one can be elevated to the spiritual world, back home, back to Godhead. Right, so it's just seeing it in connection with Krishna. So seeing it in connection with devotional service, he doesn't want to see anything outside of that. So if you have to work in a variety of areas, you learn to see that in connection with Krishna, because he doesn't like seeing it not connected to Krishna. But if he doesn't have to work with all that, then why would you get involved? Right? The devotees are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Did we read back home, back to Godhead?
Yes.
Okay. The devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are especially attracted by the highest material quality, goodness. And the qualified brahmana is the symbolic representation of this goodness. Therefore, a devotee is attached to the brahminical stage of life. He is not very much interested in passion or ignorance, right? Because he's attracted to the goodness and he's trying to bring that in line with Krishna. That becomes pure goodness. Mm-hmm. So goodness for Krishna is pure goodness.
Yes.
Right? Not that passion for Krishna is pure passion, right? No, it's yeah. So it becomes pure goodness.
That sounds good.
So Vishuddha Rajas. Yeah. But you see, it's pure passion, pure. It's just mundane. It's just taking you away. So goodness, the pure goodness. So that's why the lifestyle, the brahminical lifestyle, is the natural lifestyle of the Vaishnava. That's why Vaishnavas, you know, especially as any Vaishnava, but especially as we become situated, then they're understood or respected as Brahmins. Right? So it's not depending upon their occupational position. It's their position, their character, that makes this brahminical standing. Okay, so they're not interested in the other modes. Because passion means it's about yourself. Ignorance means you can't tell, you can't tell Arthur from Martha. Right? You just don't know what's right, wrong, what to do, what not to do, what you should do, you say you shouldn't. What you shouldn't, you say that's what should. So that's a waste of time. And then passion has so much unnecessary complication and all that, that it's also distracting. But goodness, then it's there. So then goodness connected to Krishna, then it's not dry.
Maharaj, can you say that it is necessary to go to pure goodness, to go through goodness?
That's the natural way you see. The more you're connected with pure goodness, you would just situate yourself in goodness.
Yes.
But it's not that you, it means you have to specifically get to goodness, then only you can get to pure goodness. Simultaneously, why are we cultivating goodness? Because that's the natural position of one who is engaged in the Lord's service. In other words, that position must be pleasing to Krishna. If the Brahmins are situated in goodness and the Brahmins are dear to Krishna, then why wouldn't that be the natural position? Right? And the Vaishnavas are considered the best of the Brahmins.
Yes.
So we can see that element is there. So that's goodness. The connection to the Lord, that's pure goodness. So whatever position we're in, we try to engage that in Krishna's service.
Yes.
But this idea that you have to elevate yourself to goodness, only then you can practice devotional service, that's wrong.
Yes.
I think that was very popular in the 90s.
Yes. Yes.
The mid-90s, it was a big, big philosophy. It went on for a few years and then fizzled out. Because the point is it's wrong.
Because it's hard to maintain.
Because it can't be maintained. So that whole thing, but that's the point, is then we're saying devotional service is dependent upon the mode of goodness. And so then that means the activities of goodness, that means the knowledge and activities, that means devotional service is dependent upon karma and jnana. But it's independent. So even if you're not situated in those, you can still do devotional service. You know, just like, how you say, that Bowery bum, who then, you know, came careening into the 26th Second Avenue with some rolls of toilet paper.
Yes.
And you know, walked right through the crowd and right past Prabhupada. And, I'm not sure, maybe his hands were full, but whatever it is, then he'd go in into the bathroom. The bathroom is basically the end of the means there's a little bit of a hall. It's not a very big hall. like that. It might be like the size of these two squares there and this three this way, or even a little shorter. So at that end is up on a little raised, that's where Prabhupada sat. But in the corner of that, there was a little one of those, I don't know, you call it a bathroomette? You're like, you have a kitchenette, this is a bathroomette? And so then he just went right past in there. So it's like right next to Prabhupada, you know, goes in there, puts everything. He's probably made some noise, this and that, trying to get it, dropping things and that. And then when he's finished, he came out, you know, like very respectful and that, and just, you know, and then left. So now if we stop in the door and says, well, until he's living a lifestyle and mode of goodness, he can't offer anything to Prabhupada, you know, no. But by doing that, you get purified. Now you're more inclined. So the point is when it's being discussed, what's the lifestyle, what's the mode of goodness, what's the standard position, then as you get purified, you accept it. You don't come up with the, what was it? Was it in this one or was it the one before? I am this body, I am this community, I am this from this nation. Huh? Yeah. Yeah, previous chapter. You don't do that. Because then you won't get to goodness. Because if I'm these things, one, it's ignorance. That's just straight up front ignorance. Two, why are you saying this? Because you want certain benefits and don't want to do certain things. That's passion. So where's the goodness at all? Right? Because the modern life, what are you supposed to do? You know what I'm saying? Let us say I go to bed at, you know, 9 o'clock, get up at 2 in the morning, go down to your job that starts at 2 in the morning, you know, picking up garbage or street cleaning or that, or, you know, like that. Another person like that, they only go to bed in the morning and then they start wake up at noon and then stay up all night and do whatever they do. This and that. Are any of these not bona fide in the Western context? Right? You understand? Anything goes. There is no standard. So how can you say there's any goodness? Goodness means that there are standards. You're following them. Right? Does that make sense? So we have to be able to appreciate that the mode of goodness is the natural position for the soul. Pure goodness is the actual position. But at least from goodness, if we're still under the control of the modes, then goodness is going to be the best position to get to pure goodness. So if you fall down from pure goodness, you fall to goodness. Because all it means is the same lifestyle, you're remembering Krishna, is pure goodness. You forget Krishna, you're in goodness. Then you remember Krishna, you're in pure goodness. But if not, you're remembering Krishna and you're in pure goodness, then you forget, then you're in passion or ignorance, and then it's like it's too much of a roller coaster ride. Right? So that's why the scriptures are not recommending the Matterhorn, right? You know, it's too wild. Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's just you're not that's why then it's preferred, because why passion and ignorance? Because it's about the material. I'm talking about not being so absorbed in the material, just how much is necessary. Where's the passion or ignorance in that? Does that make sense? It's not there. So it's about doing what needs to be done, how much you need to do, and only that much. That's goodness. So you can't have, the two technically don't go well together. But whatever position you're in, you start from there. So therefore, if one comes from a background of passion, one starts from there and engages that in Krishna's service. And then it will go forward. We may want to situate ourselves in goodness, but we're actually trying for pure goodness. Does that make sense? So it's not that you're not trying for that, but devotional service is independent of that. That's the thing. Right? So, yeah. Therefore, a devotee is attached to the Brahminical stage of life, right? And Brahminical means understanding Brahman. You know, it means devotional service. He's not very much interested in passionate ignorance, although these qualities also emanate from the Supreme Lord, Vishnu. Right? Everything comes from Vishnu, but we're interested in those things that are pleasing to Vishnu as a person. Everything comes from him and is on the support of his Brahman, and it is controlled by him as Paramatma. But what's pleasing to him are those aspects of goodness that are directed towards the Lord. In Srimad Bhagavatam, the devotees are described as Nipuna Buddhayaha, which means they are the most intelligent class of men, uninfluenced by attachment or hatred. The devotee lives very peacefully and is not agitated by the influence of passion and ignorance. Right? So, uninfluenced by attachment and hatred, what's that come from? When there's attachment, then you get hatred. Right? So when we see in the previous page where Prabhupada says that they hate, he naturally hates the association of so-called society, friends, or love. That's because, but it's not, there's no mundane attachment. So it's not that he hates society, friendship, loves, likes to sit out in the forest and all that and live in his tree, and anybody goes by, he shoots him with his shotgun. So we're not talking about that. Well, you know, we're talking about he does not have any material attachments. So this hatred, we said, means is that he does not interested or like at all material consciousness. So he's situated in the spiritual. The devotee lives very peaceful and is not agitated by the influence of passion and ignorance. Sukadeva Goswami continued, the Lord expands into three kinds of manifest beings: the Rakshasas, the demons, and the demigods, all of whom are created by the Lord's material energy and conditioned by her modes. But among these three modes, it is the mode of goodness which is the means of attaining life's final success. Mm-hmm. Right? Does that make sense? So you have the demons, the demigods, Raksha, it means they're in between. Mm-hmm. Like that. They're more powerful, they're the Antariksha. So you have Bhur Bhuva Swa. That's the three kinds of living entities. Mm-hmm. So Rakshasas are Bhuvar, demons are the lower, demigods are then here on up. All of whom are created by the Lord's material energy and conditioned by our modes. But among these three modes, it is the mode of goodness, which is the means of attaining life's final success. Right? It's the means, but devotional service is not dependent upon it, but it's the means. You understand? It's just like, okay, you want to cook something, the means is going to be the pot. But the point is the pot doesn't do the cooking. Right? So, someone who does not know how to cook, even he has a pot, he still, nothing will happen. But someone who knows how to cook, then with that pot, they can do something. So, if you, like it said before, if you follow all religious principles, but you don't know devotional service, it's a waste of time. Right? So that we can understand, it's not talking about just being in goodness in those practices. Mm-hmm. So, but devotional service is the real thing. But that has to be expressed. That has to be a situation. There has to be activities. There has to be knowledge. So that we use the mode of goodness. Mm-hmm. So that what's defined by goodness, that's what we use. Mm-hmm. Right? And using that, then it's easy to get situated in pure goodness. Right? So someone who knows how to cook, now they can use the pan or the pot or whatever is available. Is that so they know the principle, they know what they're looking for, so they can make it happen. Right? Like I've seen some cooks, see in the West, I don't know maybe they're the only thing available or something. You have these pots, you know, big pots you want to cook for, you know, the Sunday program or something. So the big pots. But they're very tall, but the bottom is small. I guess one is that it can go on the stove and then all the heat goes on the bottom and then you can have a lot of volume there. But two, I think they're for cooking soup or something because they're just tall pots. You know? And so, means back in the 70s, I remember seeing this, is that because that's all the pots the temples had. Like that, if you had brought some woks from India and, you know, like that, and had a few things like that. But that's what they had. So, now, understanding the principle of a chance, they would put the ghee in the pot, put all the spice, and turn it on an edge, so that now it all sits in one place and it cooks. And then when it's ready, then they'll put it back flat and then throw everything inside. So that's because they know cooking. Then they can engage and get whatever done. So the point is, knowing devotional service is the most important aspect. Or associating with those who know. Because even though you don't know, you associate with those, they'll engage you in devotional service. Right? Yeah?
In this list, the humans, where are the humans? Rakshasas, demons.
It depends upon what's the mentality. Because these are the mentalities. Means you want to go by forms, and you need 8,300,000. Right? But it says there's three kinds of manifest beings. So there's that means the mentality. Someone's a Rakshas, someone's a demon, someone's a demigod. So then it just depends upon what's your mentality. Rakshasas have their special powers and that, and they're kind of have their own society. They don't necessarily, they behave badly, but it's not necessarily that they particularly disturb the demigods. The demons, they disturb the demigods generally, but the Rakshasas don't. They just do their Rakshasa stuff. It's like when the sun god goes on his chariot, then there's a Rakshasa that's there. So each of the 12 Adityas, they have a different Rakshasa. So it's not there. You know, Bhima's brother, Ghatotkacha, he's a Rakshasa. Like that. So he's not a demon. Duryodhana, he's a demon. He's not a Rakshasa. Yudhishthir, he's a demigod. Is that so? Okay.
And we are.
I take your pick. Yeah, there's a choice.
It's a bit narrow.
Pick a card, any card. But among these three modes, it is the mode of goodness which is the means for attaining life's final success. So it appears here that Rakshasas are ignorance, demons, passion, demigods, goodness. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, it may be questioned here why a devotee should be attached to the quality of goodness in the material world, if he is transcendental to all material qualities. The answer is that there are different kinds of people existing in the modes of material nature. Those in the mode of ignorance are called Rakshasas. Those in the mode of passion are called asuras, and those in the mode of goodness are called suras, or demigods. Under the direction of the Supreme Lord, these three classes of men are created by material nature. But those in the mode of goodness have a greater chance to be elevated to the spiritual world, back home, back to Godhead. Not that the others can't, but they have a better chance. Like Prahlad Mars is from the category of demons, but he is on the transcendental platform. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Sukadeva Goswami said, the learned Brahmanas living along the river Saraswati came to this conclusion in order to dispel the doubts of all people. Thereafter, they rendered devotional service to the Supreme Lord's lotus feet and attained his abode. Right? So it wasn't just that they were arguing amongst themselves. They wanted to know so that the people in general would be convinced and take up devotional service. So we see that they took up with great, great determination, and then that's the example for others. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, those who are actually eager to be liberated from material entanglement would do well to accept at once the conclusion given by Sri Sukadev Goswami. Right? So that's the point. Vishnu Supreme, take up that worship, then by doing that, then you'll attain all good fortune. Sri Sukadev Goswami said, thus did this fragrant nectar flow from the lotus mouth of Sukadev Goswami. Oh, that's Sutta saying. The son of the sage Vyasadeva. This wonderful glorification of the Supreme Person destroys all fear of material existence. A traveler who constantly drinks this nectar through his ear holes will forget the fatigue brought on by wandering along the paths of worldly life. Right? Right. So you hear, what is it? There's that one. No, it's now. It's a very famous, the Pilgrim's Progress? Is that it? Famous book? No? Different circle. Mm. Well, like that. So you have these things, or you know, people do the, you know, the traveling things, and they go out and do blogs and all these things. But then, at some point, you weary of the wandering, the paths of worldly life, and so then the actual traveler takes up constantly engaging in service to the Lord. Then you travel back to Godhead, much better destination. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.